Number 23B.
So we must be very clear about the fact that treatment, from the point of view of principle or the divine mind, is always remaining in its own realm, never goes outside its own realm. That the divine principle only knows the universe of ideas. But that idea, through soul sense, comes to us and talks to us. Soul sense, therefore, brings up specific ideas. Now, at that point, we then go and see, yes, this idea is a fact about its counterfeit. And the counterfeit is that which has to be destroyed, that has to be annihilated. So when that counterfeit, when we see that counterfeit, therefore the specific error, then we really go at it. Then we really can take the whole, say, world order or the Christ order according to the situation and really begin to realize that through the inverted world order, that counterfeit has nothing at all to do in reality. That you can go either through the world order or through the Christ order according to where your Christ mentality is at that moment. But we can see that this specific belief, from the point of view of mind, has no power, has no intelligence. That from the point of view of spirit, that specific belief, that specific error has no substance. Therefore, it cannot unfold and cannot get bigger and bigger and bigger. That from the point of view of soul, that specific error can never talk to us, can never say anything, has no testimony of the physical senses, cannot really influence us and influence us erroneously. That specific error, from the point of view of principle, we see that it cannot operate, that it has within itself no power to operate and to govern us and to dominate us and to enslave us, that it cannot do. That from the that specific error, from the point of view of life, say, that has no life in itself, that it cannot say, I live, I have a being, I have an I amness, I am. It cannot say that. It's always dead as a dodo, always. And so I analyze it, that error, that specific error, has never started and therefore does not need to have an end. It is a nothingness. Or from the point of view of truth, I can see that specific error is, from the point of view of truth, unconscious. It has no consciousness. It has no consciousness which can say, I am conscious of it, I am conscious of this evil, I am conscious of this disease, I am conscious of this difficulty. It has no consciousness. Therefore, it cannot dominate us, it cannot dominate the body, it cannot dominate man, it has no dominion, it cannot enslave man either, it cannot enslave the body, so the man is free, the idea of man is free, so that the opposite specific error is has no real consciousness. Or from the point of view of love, you can see that specific error really has no plan which it tries to fulfill, that it does not plan out something how it can corner us, how it can corner us until we can't find out anymore a way out. It cannot corner us. The error tries to corner us and corner us until we say, I give up. Well, that's not the way that love operates as the idea of man. So, in this way, you see, we are detecting the specific truth. The specific truth then unveils really the specific error. And then when we know the specific error, we can handle that specific error as being nothing. I'm bringing it back to nothingness. Now, the point is, you see, in this treatment, that every treatment is new, that we cannot repeat a treatment, that it is always a matter of inspiration, of the revelation of the divine mind reading, and therefore it is wrong what we see so often, that Christian Scientists feel that there are certain rules, definite rules, which say how to handle a specific case in the same way as they have been handled before. Every case is new, every time really the treatment is fresh, and every time we feel something quite unique. I say that because you know that that way of treatment, which actually already Kimball was feeling out, that way of treatment has been misunderstood very much. Perhaps you are aware of the Kratzer-Kimball book. I don't know if you know that Kratzer-Kimball book, the Kimball book that was written by a man called Kratzer. And after Kimball had passed on, he published a book in which he shows what Kimball has been teaching, and has been teaching how Kimball would tell them how he handled this case, that case, the other case, this situation, that situation, so that he had a whole book full of examples what Kimball may have told or may not have told, that is not so important, how he handled a specific situation. Now, Kratzer made that mistake, that he took those specific situations, put it to a book, as if one could handle a similar situation in the same way as Kimball did. So that if you have a heart disease, Kimball may have told how he handled it, and Kratzer put it down, and so the practitioners come and look up heart disease, my patient had heart disease, on pitch so-and-so, his heart disease, and there Kimball has said, you handle it this and this way. That's a good example of how not to treat the case. The story runs, and that is apparently a true story. I think Braden has it in his book, that when that book came out and it was given to Mrs. Kimball, who was still alive, that Mrs. Kimball went into her bedroom, withdrew into her bedroom, read the book partly, and came out in tears, and said, they have made the teaching of my husband to a recipe book. See? And that is what is still around, that we look for a recipe that really one feels well. I have already have a case like a heart disease. I have had it also. So if again that comes up with a patient, I know how to handle it because I handled it 2 years ago this and this way, and I remember how I handled it, and then it did the trick, so I do the same, I apply the same rule today, and then it doesn't work. Because every case that we have to see is unique, every case. Therefore, there is no recipe book for how to handle a stomach ache, and how to handle a kidney ache, and how to handle a liver disease, and how to handle whatever comes. There are so many diseases. There is no recipe for that. The treatment in science is something so pure and something so delicate, and something that has to do with spiritual sense, with soul sense, and is every time a holy approach. We always feel when we give a treatment that we are treading on holy ground and not on a routine thinking. On a routine thinking, I handled this case as I handled the other case 2 years ago and 10 years ago. That is not a Christian Science practice. It is always God at work. It's always the divine principle at work through the divine mind who knows all. So in this way, we really see that a practitioner, so to say, always has to be a prophet. He has always to see what the eyes don't see, what the human mind does not know. A prophet is defined by Mrs. Eddy as a spiritual seer. We have seen how through mind reading we have to see the right idea. He's a spiritual seer. which Mr. Sethi further explains and says it is the disappearance of material sense before the conscious facts of spiritual truth. You see, that is what happens in a treatment. That each time one is a prophet, and each time one looks away from the material senses and draws right back to the spiritual sense of soul, and let that soul sense speak to us, and that is that which takes away the false sense. Yes, so if we have a good go at evil and see its nothingness, that it is a counterfeit of the true idea, then we can see, all right, and as a fifth step, we go and, so to say, take that specific error and compensate it, so to say, with the fullness of the spiritual truth. So that instead of seeing the nothingness of error, we begin to see life, the abundance of life, the essence of life, and build up the true specific fact, the true specific idea, and close it, so to say, with all the seven synonymous terms. So whatever that specific idea was, say we discover that it was, say, a heretical belief or something like that, then we know the specific belief, but that's not enough to know that a heretical belief is a false sense, that that is an erroneous sense, and that it is nothing. We also have to see the positive sense of it, the true heredity that we have, the true inheritance we have, and so we turn to that fact of true inheritance, which is, say, truth. We have inherited the whole truth. We are the Son of God, and now I begin to fill that fact with all the seven synonymous terms. I begin to see that he has always had as his ancestry the divine mind. That mind brought him into being. I begin to see that as his ancestry he had spirit. He was always born anew from spirit, in the bosom of the Father, as John would say. So that he is born of the spirit, so that he had never had any defect of a birth row or anything like that. That only the purity of spirit was bringing him forth, so that he has never been touched by a material circumstance. I see in his inheritance as the Son of God that as an idea of soul, he has soul sense. He has that wonderful soul sense which knows his own identity, which knows that he is, that he knows that fact that I am that I am, that he knows his selfhood properly and divinely, or that inheritance as an idea of principle, he has inherited really the whole knowledge, the whole understanding of the divine science. He's brought forth by divine science. That brought him into human being. And so he's full of that scientific sense. He does not lack a scientific sense. He cannot say, I am not a student. He cannot say, I am not educated. He can't say that because he is the idea of divine science. And as a divine science, he has inherited the full knowledge of the science of being. And so as an inheritance of life, he has inherited really that he comes from life and goes to life, from life to life, always in the eternal flow of the abundance of life. He has never left life. He can't leave life. He is always conscious of his eternality. And so you can go on to see that idea of true inheritance from the point of view of truth itself, and see he has inherited the true consciousness. He has therefore a whole consciousness. Therefore he cannot be conscious of the opposite of truth, cannot be conscious of sin, sickness and death. He just can't, because he has the consciousness of truth, and that consciousness of truth cannot at the same time have a consciousness of error. And so he has a true, great inheritance. Or as an inheritance of love, he knows that he is mothered by love. He knows that love takes care of him in every situation, that he never gets into a situation which he can't not handle. He will never be cornered. He knows that he can't be cornered. He knows that he is mother, that he is beloved by God, by love, that the whole flood of love is just flooding down, and through grace, by grace, he has everything that he needs, and that grace flows down upon him. And so he is under the stream of grace and mercy, and so nothing can ever happen to him. Then we have established the fact about the specific error, which we have said, let's handle it, let's handle the belief in heredity. Heredity. Huh? Yeah. Good. You are wonderful. You understand even my English. Well, that naturally means, you see, that in order to re-establish, so to say, the wholeness of the specific truth, we naturally give to that truth a treatment that includes, so to say, the whole model of being, namely that we can see that idea not only in the light of the seven synonymous term, but we can also see that specific idea in the light of the fourfold calculus, just as John is doing constantly, always putting it right back into the cybernetic law of the fourfold calculus, and see that he's constantly operating as a cybernetic being in that fourfold calculus. And then we could go through the Word and through the Christ and Christianity and science, and would even see that idea, that specific idea, even clearer. Well, you even could put it right through the levels of consciousness or the levels of science and see that that idea is an idea living and having its being on the level of Christian science, where it is constantly protected against a false sense of heredity. You can see it from the level of absolute Christian science, that true inheritance was already there since time immemorial, was always there in the pre-established harmony of being, that it is not something that we build up, that we bring back and establish again, but that it has existed since time immemorial in that one being that is the ideal of everything. And so we have a feeling it always has existed in being. You can look at it from the point of view of divine science and see that inheritance as being the inheritance of the one Father and one Mother, as the divine principle love, that he has it since ever, namely since the Holy Ghost was operating as divine science, as the eternal one life, the eternal one truth, the eternal one love, the eternal one principle love, and that is his background, and that is his good origin. Yes, so you can see, every time we consider a specific idea, that specific idea is not just a specific idea of a specific synonymous term. It is only the pinpointing really where the accent lies. So if the accent lies of inheritance, the true inheritance, or the belief of false inheritance, that only gives, so to say, the overall theme. But then we can support that overall theme through all the classifications, the categories of being. So can you see that one can have a jolly good time in thinking about such a situation? Because one establishes really the whole model of being, because every idea is always a reflection of the whole. An idea is never a reflection just of a part. It's not just a reflection, say, here of truth, because truth is the true inheritance, is the Son of God that has inherited the Father. That's true, but that's only the specific main tone. But then that must be seen in the whole, or we leave it, so to say, as an isolated true idea. And then it is not a scientific idea. We have seen that it's a great difference between a truth and a scientific truth. So it is true with an idea. An idea per se is nothing. It's only something when we bring it back to its origin. Therefore, we should not talk about an idea as if it would be an isolated idea somewhere in the empty space. But it's always an idea of the whole. And the whole we have investigated through the categories. So in this way, we come really to that point, the sixth point, having established within us, in our understanding, the true idea about the specific truth, and have elaborated that through the whole system of ideas, we begin to realize that that does not leave any more room for an opposite belief. We have established that in understanding, and therefore at this moment it's the truth about the situation, and therefore the opposite has no more room in it. That is the point where we call healing, because the opposite belief has no more any room in that consciousness. So that consciousness then reflects really the seven and the four and the four, the whole model of being, and so there is no more room for anything else. That's the point of healing, where really the purity of the idea is then seen in its wholeness, and so the outcome of it is what we call healing, the outcome of it is what we may call improvement or a saving. So we see that healing coming along through our understanding, our understanding of the system. That's why Mrs. Edis says, not we have to heal, not we have to find out really what is at stake, but she said, let truth uncover and destroy error in God's own way. Now we understand that sense. Now we have let truth uncover and destroy a situation and gave truth or God a chance to work the way God wanted to work, and not the way we would have liked that it would work. That's always the great point where disappointment could come in, that we feel, well, it didn't work out the way I would it would work out. It worked out very differently. And there we have to be really a Christian, meaning we have to have the Christ mind, that's a Christian, to have the Christ mind, which says, we don't know what the solution is. We don't know what the best is for a patient. We don't know. We only can know the truth, the best way we know, and not what should be the result of it. That we do not know. Now are we the sons of God, but it has not yet appeared what we shall be. But we have that hope in him that when he appears, we know it. We know that it is a right solution. And that is very often a disappointment to the human sense. We would like to have it worked out very, very differently. And there we are asked to be big enough to trust that our knowledge of truth and our understanding of truth, no matter how small it still is, and it's still small, is really the fact, is really something that happens in being and is true and is right. So that at the seventh point we have even to appease ourselves and see no treatment has been in vain. No treatment has been in vain. How can a treatment, how can an understanding of the nature of God, how can that be in vain? Thou shalt not take the word of the Lord God in vain. It does something. So that even when on the human plane of thinking and expectation, things didn't turn out the way we hoped it would turn out, never let go that you gave a right treatment. As long as you gave a treatment that was in line with reality, in line with God. What then God does with it, that's his job, that's his responsibility, not ours. That's his way of salvation, not ours. We always have a human sense of salvation, and we have to let go of that human sense of salvation. It's not easy always, sometimes very difficult. And you know from your own experience and life experience, that sometimes a situation comes up which seems really to be painful and suffering, and you feel, oh gosh, God has let me down. I have let myself down. I didn't see the truth. And you feel there is no solution, and things have turned out very, very differently than what we hoped for. But if you look back 40 years later, we say that's the best thing that happened. Has the situation changed? Only our consciousness has changed. Our perspective has changed. And therefore we have to be within ourselves assured that that every treatment has an effect. It's never in vain. You can't give a true treatment that is in vain. Only the human outcome of it is not always that which the human asks. But that's not important. The human is anyway a blind human. He cannot see really the plan of God. Only the divine mind knows that plan of God. So also, even if it seems that the healing or the solution of a problem was not as what we expected, and we say, in an erroneous way, we say we didn't make the demonstration, is in itself an error. We always must see that that something that has been set right in our consciousness is reaching our continent and ocean. It has a universal effect, not only on somebody specifically, but because mind, spirit, soul, all those synonymous terms, all those capitalized terms are universal facts. They cannot be localized to a specific locality, to a specific place, to a specific person. Evil is neither place, nor thing, nor person, so that we know every effort, every loving effort, every devotion in the line of understanding really God is always something that blesses the whole universe. Think of Jesus. Did Jesus' healings, were they just local? They still work in the whole universe. They still attract the Christian to the Bible. If he hadn't done those works, we would not be attracted to the Bible. Those healings still live on. They live on. And so our treatment still lives on eternally because it's in the realm that which has neither time, nor space, nor power, nor matter. It's a spiritual realm. So rest assured that a treatment is always a treatment of God and not of us. Okay? This is what I wanted to say today.